Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Ever get that feeling? Like you're drowning in information, papers, articles, your own notes even, piling up everywhere. But still, you're not really getting it.
Yeah, you're swimming in it, but you're still thirsty. Thirsty for understanding, I mean.
Exactly. Making sense of it all, it's like a job in itself sometimes.
Well, that's where we come in. That's the deep dive. We take those sources, those piles you're wrestling with, and we pull out the good stuff, the real insights, you know, the aha moments.
The stuff that actually sticks with you, without getting lost in the weeds.
Think of it as like getting a concentrated dose of knowledge, tailored just for you. And today, we're diving into something pretty fascinating, holistic thinking.
Right. And the material you brought for this deep dive is this document on holistic thinking by Joseph E. Kassar.
Yeah. And what struck me about Kassar is his background.
Oh, it's incredible. Decades as a systems engineer, then years in academia on top of that.
Not just theory. Real world experience.
He's even written about things like amateur radio.
He has.
And get this, the conceptual laws of Christmas.
Conceptual laws of Christmas. Wow. That's quite a range.
You don't see that every day.
Yeah.
That kind of breadth, though, it really suggests a unique perspective, don't you think?
Definitely. It's not just trivia. It shows a mind that connects things, sees the bigger picture. And that's what holistic thinking is all about, right?
Absolutely. So in this deep dive, we're going to pull out the essence of what Kassar's saying, the core principles and practical tools.
So you can actually use them in your own life, your work.
And we'll keep it clear and concise. No information overload here.
Just those aha moments.
All right. So let's get into it. When we say thinking, what do we actually mean here?
At its most basic, thinking is how our brains deal with information. We take it in, process it, store it for later.
So our brains are like, some kind of information processing center.
That's a good way to put it. Kassar actually talks about this model in psychology, comparing the mind to like a computer. Both get input, work on the data, store it, retrieve it, then produce output. The difference being, obviously, the brain's a lot more complex.
We're not just running code, right?
No, not at all. And what's interesting for holistic thinking is how we extend our brains. Think about notes, books, files.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Those are all ways to expand our memory, our processing power, beyond our own heads.
It's true. I feel like I do my best thinking surrounded by notes and books and stuff. Okay, so we've got the basics of thinking down. Let's get to the specific tools. Kassar talks about synthesis and hierarchical thinking.
So synthesis, in this sense, it's about combining things.
Yeah.
Taking separate ideas, elements, and making something more complex, like building a Lego castle, brick by brick.
He's a great example with making instant coffee. Shows all the parts. Mm. The cup, the spoon, hot water, kettle, the coffee itself.
Mm.
And it looks kind of jumbled at first.
It does. And yeah. That's kind of like how our initial understanding of something can be, a jumbled mess of thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he introduces this idea of ingredients, just the coffee and the water.
Right. And by creating that higher level category, suddenly there's order.
I see.
The ingredients are separate from the tools, the actions. There's a hierarchy.
Ah, so it's about finding those umbrella concepts that bring clarity to the chaos.
Exactly. And by doing that, you don't just organize your thoughts. You start to see the relationships better, the different levels of abstraction.
That makes sense. Okay, another tool he mentions is concept maps, or sometimes called affinity diagrams. How do those fit into holistic thinking? Concept maps are visual. They show how different ideas link together.
Okay.
And the thing is, those concepts aren't just connected in one simple way. There can be multiple complex relationships.
It's about the web of connections, right?
Right. And by mapping those out, you can spot patterns you wouldn't see in a list. You start to grasp the whole system, not just the parts.
Got it. Okay, next is generating ideas. Brainstorming, we all know that. But he talks about doing white hat thinking first. What's the point of that?
So he outlines the usual brainstorming rules. No criticism right away, let ideas flow freely, all that.
Right.
But white hat thinking comes before that. It's about being objective, assessing the information you already have, checking its relevance, accuracy, before you even start brainstorming new stuff.
So making sure you're on solid ground before you start building, basically.
Exactly. You separate what you know for sure from what you think you know, and you figure out what information you're missing.
Makes sense. He gives some questions to ask during this white hat phase, too.
He does. Like, what do we know for sure? What are we missing? How do we get that missing information?
Those are really helpful. It's like Brainstorming becomes more strategic then, not just random ideas flying around.
Exactly. More focused, yeah. Grounded in reality. And that leads to better ideas in the end.
Okay, I like that. Now, for analyzing relationships, he's got these cause and effect charts and causal loops.
Right. Those are about understanding how different things affect each other within a system.
Right, right.
Cause and effect charts are specifically for problems.
Yeah.
Like his example of the coffee not getting hot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'd map out all the possible causes. Maybe the kettle wasn't on, the water level was low, power outage, whatever.
So tracing the problem back to the root,
mm-hmm.
systematically, not just guessing.
Exactly. Then causal loop diagrams take it a step further. They show how things are interconnected over time.
The dynamic relationships.
Yes. The predator-prey example. How changes in one population impact the other in a cycle.
Right. Like, if there are more predators, the prey population goes down.
Mm.
Then the predators have less to eat.
And their numbers go down, allowing the prey to rebound. It's a loop.
And he uses that example of heating water and then adding ice.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Shows opposing feedback loops. Heating, that's positive feedback. The longer you heat, the hotter it gets.
Makes sense.
But adding ice, that's negative feedback. It works against the heating. It
brings the temperature back down.
And the interplay of those forces determines what happens to the system overall.
Okay, so these tools are really getting at that interconnectedness, huh?
They are. It's not just linear thinking. It's about the web of relationships.
All right, next up is project management. And he talks about PERT charts. I've seen those before.
Yeah, PERT charts lay out the tasks in a project, their dependencies, the critical path, which tasks determine the total project time.
Right, so you can see the whole timeline. But what's the holistic angle here?
It's about communication. The chart shows everyone how their individual work fits into the big picture.
Okay.
Who depends on their output, who they depend on, like internal customers and suppliers.
I see, yeah.
So everyone understands the flow of work, where the bottlenecks might be, and how their piece affects the whole project.
So it's not just about scheduling. It's about the team understanding how they all fit together.
Exactly. And Kasser actually tells this funny story about being corrected for using PERT charts as a systems engineer. Some people thought it wasn't the right tool.
Huh, interesting.
It just goes to show, tools can be useful in unexpected ways. You got to look at them from different angles.
That's a good point. Okay, let's talk about visualizing data. Control charts, XY charts, pie charts, we see these everywhere. What are the key takeaways here?
With control charts, which track performance over time, he points out something interesting. People usually use line graphs. But sometimes a bar chart can be better for comparing performance across different periods.
Oh, interesting. So the way you visualize the data can actually affect how much you get out of it.
It can. Then there are XY charts, scatter plots. Those are great for exploring the relationship between two things, not just over time, like a trend chart.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
He gives this example of Fred, who's practicing shooting. He tracks his practice time against his accuracy.
Okay.
And the XY chart might show a correlation there. The more he practices, the better he gets, maybe.
Makes sense. And then there are pie charts. What's the key thing to remember about those?
Pie charts are best for showing proportions, like different categories as parts of a whole.
Like slices of a pie, yeah.
Exactly. He uses the example of student grades in a class. But, and this is important, don't use them if you have too many small categories.
Oh, right, because then the slices get too tiny to even see.
Right, and they're not good for precise comparisons between slices either. Bar charts are better for that.
Good to know. So use the right tool for the job, basically.
Right, and make sure the visualization actually helps you understand the data.
Okay, now for something completely different, ambiguity in humor. This seems like a bit of a sidetrack.
It might seem that way. But it touches on how we interpret information. Kasser talks about how English humor often uses ambiguity, playing with the different meanings of words.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Like that cartoon he mentions. It's funny because it's unclear whether the employer was happy with the person's work or happy they quit.
Right. Two possible meanings.
And that's the point. Information isn't always straightforward. There can be multiple valid interpretations. And recognizing that can sometimes lead to new ideas or solutions.
Interesting. So ambiguity can be a good thing.
It can, but too much ambiguity can also lead to confusion. The point is to be aware of it.
Okay, that makes sense. Now for this story about the silent debate, thinking outside the box.
Oh, this is a great one. So these Jewish scholars are facing a debate with the Pope's scholars. Huge stakes. They're feeling pressured.
High pressure, yeah.
And then this old man, Moish, who usually just does odd jobs around the synagogue, he says he'll represent them. But with one condition.
What condition?
The entire debate has to be silent. No talking allowed.
Wow.
He just says he's not used to people listening to him anyway. But the brilliance is how it forces everyone to think differently.
They have to communicate without words.
Right. They have to break the usual rules of debate. And that leads to some really creative thinking.
That's amazing. So sometimes limitations can actually spark innovation.
They can. It's about challenging those limitations.
Okay. Back to more practical tools. Organizing ideas with whiteboards and sticky notes. I love those.
Me too. Kassler explains how they can be used for planning, like organizing a conference session.
Okay.
You can label areas of the whiteboard with themes and then use sticky notes for individual presentations.
So you can easily move things around, group similar ideas together.
Exactly. And he mentions having a category for miscellaneous topics, for stuff that doesn't fit elsewhere yet.
I do that all the time. It's so helpful to see it all visually. You can really get a feel for the flow of ideas.
It makes it more interactive, too. You're not just stuck with the static list.
Right, right. Okay, what about stoplight charts? Those seem pretty simple.
They are simple, but powerful. You know, red, yellow, green, like a traffic light. Kassler adds blue for much better, too.
Okay.
And just by using those colors, you can instantly see the status of different parts of a project, or any situation, really.
So it's a quick visual summary. You can see what needs attention right away.
Exactly. It communicates a lot of information at a glance.
Okay, now this next one sounds a bit more technical. Aggregating entities with N2 charts. What are those?
N2 charts are a bit like concept maps, but they focus on how things interact, specifically their inputs and outputs.
Their interfaces.
Right. So instead of just showing general associations, they reveal patterns in how different elements connect.
What?
Kassler gives this example where functions B, C, and D all interact a lot. So you could group them into a bigger entity, BCD.
Like a cluster.
Yes. And the same for E, F, and G, they become EFG. It's about identifying those tightly coupled groups.
You can see the modularity of the system.
Exactly. And he mentions that N2 charts were developed around the same time as design structure matrices, which are similar.
Interesting. All right, let's talk about writing. He talks about annotated outlines and peer review.
Those are both so important for clear thinking and communication.
For sure.
So with annotated outlines, instead of just a table of contents, you have a paragraph summarizing each section.
Okay.
He even suggests starting each paragraph with, "This section will contain."
Oh, I like that.
It forces you to be clear about what each part of your document is for.
And the reader knows exactly what to expect.
Right. He compares it to presentations, too. The headings are like slide titles, and the paragraphs are the explanations.
That's a good analogy. And then peer review. He emphasizes getting feedback early.
Yes. Even on incomplete drafts. That way you can catch problems early on, resolve conflicts, clarify things.
Saves you a lot of headaches later.
It does. It's about collaboration, making sure your message is clear and well-structured.
Okay, let's touch on presentations. He's got a bunch of principles for those. What are some of the big ones?
Okay, well, starting strong is key. Summarize the benefits for the audience right away. Grab their attention.
Right, make it clear why they should care.
Exactly. And then organize the presentation around one central idea. Support it with examples and visuals.
Always be focused.
Yeah. And there's this 2-minute rule he mentions. Don't speak for more than 2 minutes per slide.
Oh, that's a good guideline.
It is. And using both visuals and words helps, too. People learn in different ways.
Right. Reinforce the message.
And, of course, time management, practice, eye contact, handling questions well, all that good stuff.
The basics, yeah.
He also has this funny rule. If people start leaving, stop talking.
Oh, well, that's good advice.
It is. The point is, good presentations are about the audience. Be clear, engaging, and respect their time.
Absolutely. Okay, shifting gears again. Asking the right questions. He talks about closed versus open questions.
Right. And the kind of question you ask determines the kind of answer you get.
Of course.
Closed questions, they have limited answers, like yes or no.
Right.
Those are fine for getting specific information. But open questions, those are the ones that really get you thinking.
You don't have a set answer.
Right. And Kassler says good questions should be clear, concise, and focus on one main idea.
So no rambling multi-part questions that confuse everyone.
Exactly. And if you do have a multi-part question, announce it beforehand. So the key here is asking better questions leads to better understanding.
Makes sense. All right, next is active listening and the stall technique.
So stall is more the specific tactic. But the active listening principles behind it, Those are crucial for understanding other perspectives.
And that's key for holistic thinking, right? Seeing things from different angles.
Exactly. So active listening means truly focusing on what the other person's saying, asking questions to clarify, and then, this is important, rephrasing what they said to make sure you got it right.
Well, that's a good tip.
It is. If they correct you, you know you misunderstood. And then you ask more questions.
So it's about more than just hearing the words. It's about understanding the other person's viewpoint.
Exactly. And that can be really challenging sometimes, but it's so important.
All right, let's talk about managing information. Intellectual property and citations. That's big.
It is. CASR gives a good overview of IP, copyrights, trademarks, all that.
Okay.
And the key thing is you need permission to use copyrighted stuff, unless it's public domain or Creative Commons.
Right.
And always, always credit your sources, no matter what.
Give credit where credit's due.
Exactly. He mentions different citation styles, like numbered references and footnotes, and it's important to include page numbers for books.
So people can easily find the information.
Yes. And he suggests weaving those citations into your writing smoothly so they don't interrupt the flow. Okay. And using citation management software can be a huge help, especially if you're dealing with a lot of sources.
For sure. Okay, we're getting towards the end here. He introduces systems thinking. How does that fit in with everything else we've talked about?
Systems thinking, it's about seeing the whole, not just the individual parts.
Okay.
He quotes Peter Senge, who says it's about seeing wholes, understanding how the parts interact, how they're interconnected.
So instead of analyzing each tree, you're looking at the whole forest.
Exactly. And you explain a system by its role in the larger context, and you focus on those feedback loops we talked about.
Right, how actions have ripple effects.
Exactly. And he contrasts this with systematic thinking, which is more linear, step by step. He also mentions Richmond's 7 skills of system thinking, which is a more structured approach.
Okay, interesting. And then he talks about perspectives for holistic thinking, the perspectives perimeter.
Yeah, that's about consciously broadening how you look at things.
Okay.
He's got these categories, external perspectives, like the big picture, operational view, internal perspectives like functional, structural, and then progressive perspectives.
Progressive perspective.
Yeah, like generic, continuum, temporal, quantitative, scientific. And he stresses that holistic thinking goes beyond just analysis, even systems thinking.
By considering all these different perspectives.
Right. The idea is that by shifting your perspective, you gain new insights.
That makes sense. What are some of the key insights from those progressive perspectives?
One big one is that problems and solutions depend on the context. What works in one situation might not work in another.
Right.
Then there's the continuum perspective. It says things aren't black and white. They exist on a spectrum.
Not either or, but to what degree?
Exactly. He uses this cool optical illusion as an example. The one where you can see either an old woman or a young woman.
I've seen that one.
It shows that people can literally see different things in the same data. So understanding different viewpoints is crucial.
Absolutely.
And then he has this example with data on a weight loss drug.
Okay.
When you look at the data as a whole, you see one trend. But when you break it down into subgroups, you see something different.
Wow. So the way you slice the data can really affect your conclusions.
It can. It's important to consider multiple factors and how they interact.
Okay. What about the temporal perspective?
That one's about time. Looking at the past, present, and future of a system, understanding the history and anticipating future trends.
Okay. Makes sense. And the scientific perspective?
That one emphasizes inference, drawing conclusions based on assumptions and evidence. He has this riddle, which container has coffee? With Hebrew labels. And it shows how our assumptions about language, reading direction, all that affect our conclusions. The point is to be aware of those assumptions.
Right, because they can lead you astray. Yeah. And he talks about combining perspectives too.
Yes. Often the best insights come from combining what you've learned from different perspectives, asking questions based on one perspective, using another perspective to find answers.
Cross-pollinating your thinking, basically.
Exactly.
Okay, last thing. Thinking beyond constraints, how does that lead to innovation?
So the continuum perspective, it encourages you to go beyond just improving what already exists. CASR gives this example of setting really ambitious targets.
Okay.
Like so ambitious that you can't reach them by just tweaking the current way of doing things.
You have to come up with something totally new.
Right. You have to think outside the box, break those constraints. And then very briefly, he introduces critical thinking.
Oh, yeah. What about that?
So critical thinking, it's about evaluating ideas, judging their quality, validity, And it works together with those different perspectives we talked about. The perspectives are about how you see things, and critical thinking is about how you judge them.
So holistic thinking is about both. Broadening your view, and then thinking critically about what you see.
Exactly. It's a powerful combination.
So, to wrap this up for you, our listener.
Holistic thinking, as we've explored it today, it's a way to make sense of complex information, to generate new ideas, analyze situations, solve problems, and it's about going beyond that narrow focus.
Seeing the big picture.
Exactly. Considering different viewpoints, using different tools, understanding how things are connected.
It's not just about the individual trees, it's about the whole forest.
That's it. And we've discussed so many tools and concepts you can use. Concept maps, white hat thinking, cause and effect diagrams, the perspectives perimeter, active listening.
It's like a whole toolbox for your mind.
It is. And by using these tools, by shifting your perspective, you can become more informed, more insightful, more effective in all parts of your life.
So think about a challenge you're facing right now. How could you use one of these tools? Or try looking at it from a different angle. We encourage you to keep exploring these techniques and to revisit your own challenges with this holistic mindset. You might be surprised at what you discover.
Absolutely. Sometimes a small shift in perspective can lead to a big breakthrough.
That's the power of holistic thinking.
It really is.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.